Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's rough out there on the job front. The four-week moving average of new jobless claims now at its highest level since 1983. The highest level in 25 years. Suddenly, it seems like no one's immune. So how do we make it through this hour on point surviving the down job market? We've got good advice on what supports are out there and what aren't. Good advice on making it through. You can join the conversation. Is anybody immune? Are you? Have you felt the chill wind of the pink slip possibility? Have you been laid off? What's your strategy for making it through? We're going to get the nuts and bolts of layoff, unemployment, and bouncing back from two career counselors this hour, and the big picture on our safety net. But first, to the employment picture. Kelly Evans is a reporter for the Wall Street Journal. She joins us from New York. Kelly, welcome to On Point.
Hello.
Hi. So what is going on out there? We just heard the numbers at the top of the hour in the news. It's the highest, filing new claims in 16 years. Is it everywhere? Is it all industries? Is it regional? What's the big picture here, Kelly?
Yeah, what's interesting is that over the last couple of months, even as jobless claims started to drift higher, first we had an impact from the hurricanes, and then we were wondering about the Boeing strike. And so we've kind of been waiting for, even though we've seen them drift upwards, what's coming clear is that it's not driven by any of these sort of unusual events. It really is broad-based. We're seeing it in every state. And in fact, tomorrow morning, the Labor Department will report those unemployment rates by state. We have Michigan already with an 8.7% unemployment rate, Mississippi 7.8%, California 7.7%. A lot of areas, a lot of states that were really hit hard by the housing bust are among those suffering the worst now. But we're seeing some huge increases everywhere. I mean, you take a state like Idaho, their unemployment rate has doubled over the last year. So, you know, that sort of gloomy picture that we're getting, once things started to look down this year, a lot of people said, yeah, the unemployment rate's rising, but it's still low. But we're not seeing the type of layoffs we saw in 2001. Well, as we now know, we're blowing past 2001. We're now talking about the recessions in the early 90s, the early 1980s, ones that were much more severe, and unfortunately kind of looks like where we're headed at this point.
It's a real change in the atmosphere. The average unemployment rate last year, 4.6%. This year, 6.5%, or in that range. The Fed now saying, I think yesterday, they expect 7.1 to 7.6 next year. We've heard, we had Neil Ferguson on yesterday talking about 10% unemployment next year. What projections are you seeing, Kelly, about where we may be headed here?
Yeah, unfortunately, those double-digit projections aren't quite as ridiculous sounding as they were just 6 months ago. I mean, a lot of guys who I've been talking to over the past year have gone from saying unemployment of maybe 6.5 or 7 to saying we've moved up so quickly that it's now much more likely we'll see 8, 8.5, or 9. And the other thing to note about unemployment is that it actually usually lags the economy. So after 2001, we didn't see the unemployment rate peak until 2003, some 18 months after the recession was over. So on the one hand, we're going to continue to see this rise for quite some time. On the other, hopefully the economy will start improving even while jobs are worsening. But the difficult thing about what we're in right now is that, you know, the more people that lose their jobs, the fewer people are spending. And that's a big problem right now at kind of the heart of what's going on, is that people are just closing their wallets. They're not going to the stores. We're probably going to have a pretty weak holiday season. And that'll just be even harder on a lot of that retail employment we usually look for at the end of the year. So we could start to see a fresh wave of job cuts at the beginning of next year. And like you said, it's gotten to the point now where when you talk to people, everyone's affected. You know, it's that old adage. It's their neighbors getting hurt. It's getting closer and closer to them. They're seeing people they work with laid off, hours cut, and that kind of thing. I wish I had more good news, but I think that it is important to kind of highlight just how serious of a downturn we're talking about.
Many Americans in the job market I've never seen this kind of employment situation, not in the early 90s, certainly many not in the early 80s. The general picture, not good here, but is there anything to be said about particular industries, sectors? Is it worse for line employees or management? I mean, we know Detroit's having a bad time, but is there an industry, sector, level way of dissecting this, Kelly?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple sectors that have really been struggling now for a couple of years. Construction, manufacturing, a lot of industries related to housing have already felt a lot of pain. So the hope there is that most of those declines will sort of taper off, that even if we see them in the context of broader layoffs, that the pain there won't be as bad. And then the question is, you know, the couple sectors that have been sort of less affected by this so far have been education, health services, and indeed, you know, when I talk to people in healthcare and in education and sort of government employment, they feel slightly more secure than people have been in other industries over the last year. So what we're definitely going to be keeping an eye on is to see, okay, do they continue to sort of weather the storm? Because that would be an important source of strength. And certainly there's a lot of people who have been laid off and who are saying maybe healthcare is the industry for me. It looks a little more stable. But on the other hand, if we start to see some serious declines in those sectors, it'll be kind of a warning bell that it really is seeping everywhere.
Hey, you know, newspapers haven't been doing so well. How are you feeling about your job, Kelly?
No, they have not. Although I'm thankful that, well, you know, the attention is now off of our poor sector and more on those banking guys and people elsewhere.
Good luck to you, Kelly. Good luck to us all. Thanks for joining us.
Sure.
Kelly Evans is a reporter for The Wall Street Journal. She joined us from New York. Joining me now from Berkeley, California, is Maurice M. Sellum, co-policy director at the National Employment Law Project. He's just co-authored a report with the Center for American Progress on what's out there and what's not in the safety net for the unemployed. Maurice, thanks very much for being here.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Tom.
Okay, give us the straight note, because a lot of people who never paid attention may be now. If I lose my job tomorrow, I'm a full-time employee, I get a pink slip, and I'm out there, what kind of supports await me, Maurice?
Well, it's a complicated picture for most unemployed workers. For many unemployed workers, you have available state unemployment benefits, which provide up to 26 weeks in most states of benefits. And then now we have an extension of unemployment benefits, which Congress and the President put into law in June. That was a limited 13 weeks of benefits, which ran out for that first wave of folks in October, about 800,000 people have already run out of that extension of benefits. So there's an effort in Congress right now. In fact, this week, if all goes well, the Senate will vote on a measure to expand those benefits for workers, giving workers up to 20 weeks of benefits in all states and 33 weeks in states with high unemployment. Which is, you know, a very real situation for many states, as Kelly mentioned.
Now, Maurice, I'm thinking a lot of people don't even know the nuts and bolts, because this is foreign territory. When you say benefits, what does that mean? What kind of money is available? If you lose your job, is it a range? Does it depend on what you are making? What do people take on average home from unemployment benefits?
Sure. Well, it's important to emphasize, and maybe we get into this more later, that there are also a lot of folks who don't qualify for benefits for reasons related to outdated eligibility rules, basically.
Like
part-time workers. If you're a part-time worker and you're looking for work, most states say that you have to be looking for full-time work to qualify. So folks who have to take care of families and work part-time don't end up collecting benefits. That hurts a lot of women workers. A lot of the rules that deny benefits to workers right now are denying benefits to the new workforce, or not so new workforce, but workforce that's changed considerably since 1935 when the program was created. So right now about 37% of workers, jobless families, collect unemployment benefits. So there's a big issue there.
So a lot of people don't get them at all. They don't have
a lot of people don't get them at all. And then you have this big group of folks who are running out of their benefits, so they're not getting any benefits either. The average benefit right now is about $293 a week. A lot of states, that's something that's determined by the states, so a lot of states have way less than that. Mississippi, it's down around 177.
Wow.
Massachusetts, it's up around 390. So there are a lot of states where, you know, you're really struggling to get by on an unemployment check. That's another area that is, you know, really needs some significant reform. Folks need more help, especially now with food prices. All the basic necessities have gone through the roof, and people really need more help with their unemployment benefits.
Your big new report says that the safety net is not nearly what it was. I get you're beginning to point at that, but compare what's out there for people now to what was there in the earlier recessions, early 90s, or in the late 70s, 80s, even earlier. How's it compare? What's available to Americans if they lose their job?
Well, as I mentioned, the workforce has changed dramatically. It used to be a workforce made up of folks who were laid off, called back to work, ended up qualifying for benefits because they had, you know, very steady employment or enough earnings to qualify. And now we're it's a workforce that's that consists of many, many more low-wage workers. Retail is much more of a very significant industry than it was before. That's low-wage work, high turnover work, many more women in the workforce. And the rules have just not kept pace to reflect those changes. And so back in the 50s and 60s, folks, more than half of workers were able to collect unemployment benefits when they were unemployed. Mm-hmm. As I mentioned, now it's down to about a third. You've got 22 states that are way below that even. So it's a very significant concern and something that that very seriously needs to be addressed if we're going to really get through this long recession, as Kelly mentioned. We're talking about a recession in the labor market that could go on for 4 years or so. If the recession lasts a couple years and it takes 2 years for unemployment to peak, that's a 3-4-5 year proposition, and we need to have a system in place that's ready and prepared for that kind of unemployment. And so Congress has some work to do, and the president-elect does as well, but there's a lot of good ideas on the table to fix the program.
26 weeks of unemployment doesn't cover much of a four-year recession, but of course people will scramble and find ways, one way or another, in that time. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Talking this hour about making it through the tumbling job market, surviving the layoff and a new era of unemployment, at least for a while, that we appear to be in right now. We've been joined from Berkeley, California, by Maurice Amselem. He's co-policy director for the National Employment Law Project. They've got a website up, unemployedworkers.org, which spells out a lot of options and rights. You can link to it through our site or check it out directly. We're joined now as well by a couple of folks who know a lot about what it means to find yourself tumbling away from a job and working your way back to your feet. Dustin Swain joins us from Nashville, Tennessee. He's an employment counselor at the state-run Tennessee Career Center in North Nashville. Dustin, thanks a lot for being with us today.
Hi, Tom. Thanks.
And with me in the studio is Patricia Smith, Senior Vice President at New Directions. It's a private Boston firm that helps professionals make career transitions. She's been with the firm for 17 years, talking with clients who have faced job losses, helping them to reconnect and find new opportunities. Patricia Smith, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. It's good to be with you.
Dustin, give us the report from the street level there. Are you seeing this unemployment in Nashville? Is there a change in the volume and complexion of what's coming into you lately?
Well, absolutely. as we are seeing here in the Career Center, we are seeing the amount of people coming in with jobless claims rising. Our jobs are declining, and you know it's causing a lot of frustration around. And absolutely, we are seeing you know lots of people just you know coming in through the doors and don't know where to go, and that's where we're here to help.
Dustin, can you just explain for people who have never had to confront this, what happens? I walk through the door. I'm a Tennessean. I walk through the door to your office in Nashville. I've lost my job. What's the process? How do you decide if I'm eligible or not? How quickly does a check come? What kind of check do you cut every week for the unemployed in Tennessee?
Well, the max benefits that you can receive in Tennessee is $275, and it's based on a figure and table that, you know, it's percentages and whatnot. Can't go into that, but that's the max that you can receive.
Does it depend on what you were making at your job before you lost it?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And you know, there's an amount of time that you have to be at work and
right.
Certain factors there.
But the maximum is $275, and how do you decide if I get it? Maurice is saying only 37% of people around the country end up getting unemployment benefits.
Well, it depends on a lot of factors. You know, you've got to be able and available to look for work. And that requirement is met once you come into the Career Center.
Mm-hmm.
And what we ask you to do is register with us, and basically you're going to provide us with some information. What's your background? You know, what's your work experience? Tell us what your skills are. And that allows us to, what our motto says is, you know, where people and jobs connect. Mm-hmm. And that's what we try to do. We work with employers and we work with job seekers. And what we try to do is actually match those, you know, two clients up. And how we do that is based on their work experience. And when the job order comes through from the employer, they're going to give us a description of what they're looking for. And so what we try to do is help that process to be a little more efficient by pre-screening the applicants that they receive. And then if we feel that the applicant has met the qualifications, we will cut a referral letter to them and try to tell them how to further apply with the employer.
And what about the balance between people looking for work and job orders these days? I mean, are you getting job orders? Are people sending you, saying we need 100 this or that, or is that bucket empty?
Yeah, it's definitely declining. It's not empty. We're seeing some different sectors kind of pick up. Here in Nashville, we're kind of unique. We're a little bit diverse as far as our sectors go. We're not just like a mining town or something like that. We actually have tourism, a lot of hospitality, service industries, things that keep us afloat a little bit more above than what the national average is. So with that kind of diverse, portfolio, if you will, of employers, kind of helps us to find other people work, maybe changing their career path. And that's some of the things that we offer here at the Career Center, if I could go into that for a minute. We like to look at our clients as having tool belts. And what we try to do here is sharpen those tools for them to go out and find their next job. And some of those services that we offer are something like a resume preparation. A lot of these people, their tool belts, they've only got one tool in that belt because they've had that job for 20 or 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're trying to do is sharpen those tools that they do have and add some to it. And how we do that is through workshops such as resume writing, interviewing, how to conduct a successful job search online. And those have been very effective. And we also have another program called the Career Readiness Certificate. This is in addition to, say, you have a GED or diploma. This is another certificate that you can present to the employer and show them some skills that you can't list on a resume.
Dustin, you've been in this work for just 4 or 5 years now. Have you ever seen anything like what you're facing at this moment? What appears to be coming?
Well, it is actually picking up. I work with a little bit more on the employer side of it,
mm-hmm.
but I do see clients as well. As our volume has picked up, we've had to pick up additional tasks around here, and it is getting frustrating for the public. And we try to go out there and recruit, let employers know what services we have for them. Find new workers, and we try to encourage the people that have recently been laid off that there is hope for tomorrow.
Patricia, let me turn to Patricia here in the studio with me. Dustin, stand by there in Nashville, and Maurice in California. Patricia, Dustin's out there telling people to get more tools in their tool belt. Everybody carries a kind of career tool belt. You deal more, I guess, with managerial, white collar, maybe even upper level people, no less vulnerable right now, I guess.
Oh, absolutely. Certainly on a national basis, we're beginning to see some changes being affected here in the Boston area. The last month and a half, we've seen companies take time to reorganize, maybe change management, but still having a growth program for growth. But they're beginning to lay off people now. There will be some
Citigroup, 50,000, Fidelity, thousands, lots of investment people, and right on, laying off plenty.
Right, or they're having hiring freezes
mm-hmm.
also.
So when they come in, what's your first advice to somebody who's just got that pink slip? Maybe it's, a couple of days, a week since the axe fell. It may be the first time for most people it mm-hmm. might well be. What's your first advice to people facing this?
Tom, what's very interesting about this is that external events in our lives change instantly, but the orientation personally takes a lot longer.
To come to terms with it, to come to grips with it.
Well, for a lot of individuals, it may be the first time that they felt that they may be perceived as having failed, for
mm-hmm.
example.
Mm-hmm.
They've been successful and they've contributed in great ways to their organizations. And from their own personal perspective, it may feel a lot more personal to them. And so we suggest that they go slowly during this time. This is an opportunity not to try to immediately think of yourself jumping back to get your identity back, your self-esteem, phone calls answered, your parking space. This is a time to really let go of that a little bit and to recognize that the anxiety and stress that you might be feeling is not necessarily that something has gone wrong or that your contributions haven't been recognized, but that something is actually changing
mm-hmm.
and that expecting rejections and expecting old fears to resurface is very normal and it's very real. However, this is a great time also to have closure on your past and look at this time for new beginnings and being very thoughtful about what else might be possible.
What do you say to people? Do you say, back on your feet, Buster, you're going to go out there and you're going to get the same kind of thing? Or do you say, time to adjust your expectations, a little downsizing in order, get real? What's your advice?
Well, honestly, we actually encourage our clients to think very much about their own strengths, interests, values, drivers. If you have a foundation of your own self initially, mm-hmm. you're going to be much more successful and have a greater control over your choices and decisions from now until the end of your working life. And the process of understanding more closely where your strengths and interests are could also lead you to opportunities you never even imagined.
In other words, broaden your thinking about what you might want to do.
Exactly.
Maurice and Salem, everybody's got to be broad-minded here, but at the same time, you've got to eat. You've got to have, you got to have a roof over your head. When those benefits run out, what do you see people doing after the 26 weeks, 33 weeks, whatever it may be?
Oh, it's a very frustrating situation. You know, on this website that you mentioned, we have thousands of workers who email us all the time. And their situation's very desperate, and that's why the benefits need to be there to help them out. People are foreclosing on their homes. They're foregoing medical treatment. Their cars are repossessed, so that they can hold on to the cell phone, which makes it very difficult to find work if you don't have a car. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a very difficult situation, but again, it kind of goes back to that folks really need the help, and unemployment benefits and other measures go a long way to provide the stability, the temporary stability that people need to get out there and look for work and have some of the hope, I think, that Patricia's mentioning. I mean, it really is devastating when a whole community is suffering from unemployment, and then they see all these people running out of benefits. That really makes it very difficult to get up every morning and feel like there's hope. And I think the more that there's a system out there to help workers, the more hope people feel like, I can survive this process. I can get up every morning. I can go look for work. And it's going to be a struggle, but it's going to take that extra effort, and we all have to kind of pitch in.
An extension in front of Congress right now. Maurice, Dustin, Patricia, stand by. Let me go to Heather in Columbia, South Carolina. Heather, what do you see? What do you know there?
Well, I'm a realtor here in Columbia, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've been a realtor for the past 4 years, and I have personally sort of seen this market slow down, going from 5 closings a month to 4 to 3 to 2, and luckily, if you have one now, my real estate company has been bought by another company, and I have not had a real estate closing in almost a year.
That means you haven't made a dime in a year.
That's right. I
Ouch.
Haven't made any money at all. And, it's been really, really tough because it was a personal thing for a while because I had been so successful in the real estate industry and had been, that was accounted for all of my work. And I kept doing the same work and wasn't making the money.
So how are you dealing with that, Heather? Are you pulling down your savings? Are you moving in with your sister, your mom and dad? I don't know. How do you deal with no income for a year?
Well, it's been really tough on my husband, who's been really great, and I finally have found a position yesterday teaching. I used to be a teacher before I went into real estate, and I've been out there in all of the job fairs and online and done all of that stuff.
Well, congratulations.
Thanks. And at a job fair, I finally did meet someone who they had a hiring freeze and they made an exception, and I'm going to be starting teaching. So, it is a sign that there are other things out there for people to do if you kind of get creative and think about, where the community needs you, because I know a lot of places really do need teachers and they're making it easy for people to make that transition.
But it took a year without income to kind of make that mental transition and then find the job. Heather, thank you very much for calling in with your story. Patricia, there's a kind of first the hole. She hits it. It was hard. It was real. She clearly came to terms with it. She's going off in a different direction now.
Exactly.
It may not have the same income as, booming 5 closings a year plus real estate income.
Right. Well, we've seen a lot of people make these changes very successfully. It does take some, it does take a plan. It takes discipline. You need to be very persistent with your process. It really helps to have someone be a guide, advisor, sounding board, whether you have a someone who's a professional that can be helpful with you, or you can draw from your colleagues or friends and have your own what we might refer to as a board of advisors, individuals that can be helpful to you not only as a support but maybe new ideas and new networks. When people are changing out of an industry and a function that they're used to, most of their contacts are going to be in that industry.
Mm-hmm.
When you're looking to do something very different, there's a lot of steps, but one of them is to begin to identify who you can meet with and in other networks, not your traditional network that you've known for many years.
You may end up in a place you never expected to be. Duncan, calling from Lexington, Massachusetts. Hi, Duncan. You're on the air.
Hi. Nice to talk to you. Yeah, I was laid off about 4 years ago, and one thing that I found out late in the process was that it's very important to make those estimated tax payments if you start to get unemployment benefits. So that you don't find out, you know, the subsequent year come tax time that you've got a tax bill and you may not have the income to support that bill when it shows up.
Yeah, Duncan, you're pointing at something a lot of people aren't aware of, that unemployment benefits are also taxed.
Yeah, it wasn't a fun thing to discover that. Not only are they, you know, the checks are smaller than the checks you're used to, but the checks you're used to get had taxes taken out, and the new ones don't. So it's I was kind of optimistic, saying, oh, that job's going to show up soon, and if it doesn't show up soon, where's that money going to come from? I don't know if anything's going through come, you know, tax time to help support that, but it didn't come through in Republican administrations, so...
How long did it take you, Duncan, to find a job, to get back on your feet?
A couple years, actually.
Ouch. That's a long time, yeah. And the benefits don't go that far. Duncan, thanks for calling. Dustin, there's a heads up, I assume. You give people, if they start getting unemployment benefits, think about the tax bill that's going to come at the end of it. What else do they not always know but need to?
Right. Well, here in Tennessee, on our when we file a claim or when a person who's been laid off or do lack of work, they are given the option to have that tax taken out in each check or at the end of the year.
That's a safe way.
Yeah, so we kind of give them a heads up on it here, whereas, you know, each state is different. And some of the other things that you, you know, might need to be aware of is that through our Career Center, say in Tennessee, we notify job applicants of jobs that they may be qualified for based on based upon their, you know, registration. They told us what they're qualified to do. And if you get a notification for that, it's important that you follow up with it and contact the office. Because if not, then that could put you, you know, that says to us that you're not looking for work if you're not following up on that lead.
What about people's psychology? You know, do you come up with jobs that they just don't want, that they think that's not right for me or even that's below me?
Well, you know, we have DOT codes, and we get it pretty close to the, you know, nail on the head. As far as what jobs they're looking for. If they've been in customer service, you know, we can narrow it down to if they've worked in a utility company for a customer complaint clerk. And what we do our job search on is based on experience, their education, and rate at minimum accepted rate of pay. So if they say that they're going to accept, they can accept $12 an hour, we're not going to contact them for $10 an hour.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about making it through the tumbling job market, surviving the layoff and the new era of unemployment we appear to be in. Maurice M. Selim is with us from the National Employment Law Project in Berkeley, California. Kelly Evans joined us earlier from the Wall Street Journal. Dustin Swain is here from Nashville in the Tennessee Career Center in North Nashville. And Patricia Smith is here. She's Senior Vice President at New Directions. It's a Boston firm that helps professionals make career transitions. We've got a caller right now from Waltham, Massachusetts. It says anonymous here. That's unusual, but hello anyway. Waltham caller, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What's your story?
My situation is I had a job this morning, and 1-2 hours ago I was just laid off.
I'm sorry.
I'm pregnant 9 months, and my due date is next week.
Oh.
And I kind of was, you know, can they even do that?
So
apparently they can. They already did, so.
We'll get an answer for you, but tell us how it happened. Was it, you know, did your boss call you in? Was it a note by email, a piece of paper on your desk? What, how'd it go?
Yeah, they called me in, and they told me that, you know, for all the economic reasons we all know, they have to do it across the company, and it's not just me. It has nothing to do with performance, and it's just basically because of economic reasons, you know.
How long had you been at this job?
About close to a year.
And you're 9 months pregnant. You're due in a week.
Yes, I am.
Okay, let's get some advice for you. Maurice, first to you, are there legal rights here? Is this okay, legal? Can this be done? Does she have any kind of recourse or special benefits?
Well, unless they were, it sounds like they're firing her for economic reasons, then she should apply immediately for unemployment benefits. She should qualify. The issue there is going to be whether she's available for work during the period where, you know, she where you have the baby during this period, if you're available to look for work. Some states are more generous about that than others. And, you know, this also gets to the difficulty and the absence of other sorts of benefits like family leave benefits, paid family leave that is not available except for in a couple states. There's an effort in Massachusetts to make that happen. You know, again, we need to modernize the safety net to reflect the workforce. The workforce now is very large numbers of women workers, folks taking care of families of all sorts, and the benefits need to be there to help people in that situation. But, I mean, obviously you should apply right away for unemployment benefits and you should qualify, and then it's a question of whether you're going to be available for work.
Dustin Swain, if our caller walked through your doors in Nashville, 9 months pregnant, out of work for a couple of hours here, baby due in a week, would she be eligible for unemployment benefits?
Well, we are one of those states that require to be available or able and available to be at work. And but we do give, you know, like as a I believe Maurice mentioned earlier, we have a little bit leniency on the fact of if you can take a part-time or a full-time job. So that would be a requirement to look at. But I would still encourage her to apply for her benefits, to go ahead and get that claim put in. And then once she becomes available to work, she can pick up those weeks, you know, that she was laid off. So
but I just want to interpret what that means. You would look at her and say, are you prepared to work tomorrow or the day after your baby's born or the day your baby's born? I mean, what does she have to attest to? What would she have to say in Tennessee? Well, I'll come to you, Patricia, about Massachusetts.
Well, in Tennessee, as I said, you know, she just would have to be able and available to work. If we offer her a job, or not offer her, of course, but if we have
find
an employer that has a job opening, and we notify her about that, and she's not available to take that job, and it meets all her requirements, then that would mean that she would not be able and available to work.
Patricia, here's a situation, whether in this state or around the country, I mean, that we've got a caller in a very tough situation. She's due in a week.
Yeah, I'm very sorry to hear your situation. And it must feel not only difficult because of you've enjoyed your work, but now you're starting a family and you wanted to have some kind of certainty as you give birth and raise a new child. I don't know what the laws here in your particular situation are, but what I would advise you to do is perhaps call an employment lawyer. An employment lawyer is not necessary to litigate, but an employment lawyer will have a lot of experience and knowledge of situations and would be a really good comfort or advisor to you.
But it sounds expensive if you've just been laid off. Calling a lawyer.
Tom, if I could
Maurice,
jump in
please,
there,
yeah,
I
please.
Mean, there's free legal services for funded by the federal government, and there are lots of very experienced advocates in Massachusetts. If you are unemployed, most likely you qualify for free legal services, and I'm sure there's a legal services office in your area.
So it's just like state legal services would be what our caller might call?
And like I said, there's some fantastic advocates there. And the issue of part-time work, what Duncan mentioned, is an issue for people in Massachusetts. The laws are not what they should be in that area. So it's important to get the legal help. I think Patricia's right.
Let me turn back to our caller. Dear Anonymous, you're only a couple hours out of it. You're probably still a little bit in shock. But how are you thinking about job, income, and baby right now?
Well, more than anything, I think the loss is maternity leave. which I was approved. I mean, I was. It was approved 3 or 4 months back, and you know, I was all set.
Yeah.
Now I have to like replan everything, and trying to look for a job in 2 or 3 months when I was supposed to get back to my job after my maternity leave.
Right.
That probably will be tricky. You know, not having a job, I would definitely have. You know, I would be in a position to not negotiate as well.
Right.
So I definitely have to rethink everything and replan everything.
I wish
more
we had
than anything, the maternity leave, which was approved.
Yeah.
Now I wouldn't have that.
I wish we had perfect advice for you. You hear Maurice's advice on legal counsel. That might be valuable. And beyond that, don't forget to savor that birth no matter what. And things will turn up. Things will get better for you. Thanks for calling, and good luck.
Right. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Let's take a call from Nashville. Joe, you're on the air.
Yeah, thank you so much for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
My comment, more than anything, is just that it's naive of America not to see this coming. Our economy was based so much on frivolous consumerism that at a point we've hit our limit, and it's all on the credit card, and how much do we really need? And the sad backlash of this, obviously, is high unemployment. And I'll take my comment off the air. Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling, Joe. Maurice, what do you say to that? Naive not to see it coming. It's too much frivolous economy. I mean, there may be an element of truth there, but it doesn't put food on the table.
It doesn't put food on the table, but I agree to the point that there's a lot that we could do to anticipate these problems. We've seen the last couple recessions, how they've played out, where there's been lots and lots of folks unemployed for very long periods of time, way more than prior recessions. And we didn't put the support in place, the safety net in place to handle long-term unemployment and the needs that we have to adapt to that new reality. And I think there's a lot of that sort of thing that we need to come to grips with right away, really, as soon as Congress and the President reconvene in January, and obviously right now when the Senate votes on this extension. Those are the sorts of things that we need to have in place. Obviously, folks are spent to the limit. The resources that people have, and Patricia and Duncan can speak to this, are very limited compared to what they had before. Folks don't have the savings that they had before, huge difference compared to prior recessions. Folks don't have access to credit that they had before. Again, they're losing their homes in record numbers. I think 45% of folks who foreclose because they're unemployed. So folks need the help. We need to have a system in place to address those situations.
What's the headcount look like in Congress right now on passing an extension of unemployment benefits? Is it promising in your view or not?
I think it's a really good question. You know, on the House side, they voted overwhelmingly, 368-28, to pass the extension before the recess. And now it's all eyes are going to be on the senators who voiced objections before the recess to extending benefits. I think the votes are there, but you need 60 votes in the Senate, and so it's important that folks call their senators and make sure that they know that this is a priority for them.
Ezekiel in Charlestown, New Hampshire, you're on the air, Ezekiel.
Yeah, how you doing? I'll try to make this as quick as possible.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a white-collar worker. I was a geographer, specifically in GIS and cartography.
Okay.
I'm from New Hampshire, obviously, and what I've noticed with my state unemployment benefits is there's a lot of support for blue-collar workers, vocational, re-education available. There's all sorts of other programs for people who've worked and have done factory work. I was almost done with my master's degree. If I was to go back to school right now and get my master's degree, which I would probably be able to get a job in my area, I would lose all my unemployment benefits, hence would not be able to pay for my master's degree. I think there's a lot more white-collar workers going out and getting laid off, and the system is really just not prepared for it. I mean, other than that, I sit around all day and look for jobs, but there's a secondary problem. All the jobs in my field, if there are any local, we'd have to upend and move. I own a house. There's very real probability of us even selling and being able to move to another job.
Right.
Or even selling our house. So it's kind of a compounded problem when you come to white-collar workers. And I can take the rest off the air.
Ezekiel, thanks. Mobility, a real issue when the house is hard to sell. Dustin Swain, what about Ezekiel's point? If he's on unemployment, but he wants to go back to school and actually get more education that might help him get employed. Does he lose the benefits that would help him get by?
Well, first off, there's a lot of people feeling the frustrations as Ezekiel has. I can speak on behalf of Tennessee. Here in Tennessee, there are training opportunities that you may be, they can actually apply for. It's not based just on blue-collar workers.
But would that extend to going to university for a master's degree in geology, in Ezekiel's case, let's say?
Sure, and there are approved training programs that you can still be on unemployment with. So there is a list that you would have to go through, and actually we have career coaches here. Let me speak something else about the career center I think I left off earlier.
Mm-hmm.
To people that have fallen on hard times, there's a lot that have. It's a lot sometimes that rely on public transportation, or even when the gas prices were high in some places, and they still are in some, to go all these different resources. Well, here in Tennessee and a lot of career centers across the nation, a lot of those services are combined under one roof. We do have three governments represented under one roof. We have the local metropolitan government, we have state government, and federal government. So a lot of the resources that they're looking for, they can come to one place. Mm. And you can see how that can help out on transportation.
Right. You still got, yes, an important issue. If the car's a problem, you still got to have a job at the end of it. And let's go to Susan in Arlington, Massachusetts. Susan, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I have been unemployed since June 2007. And at that time, I was doing freelance work, so I didn't qualify after the freelance work concluded. I didn't qualify for unemployment because it was considered self-employment.
Okay.
And I want to know, since I've been unemployed since then, and now that there's this enormous influx of competition in an already competitive field of public relations that I'm in, what do I do? How do I stay competitive when none of my calls are being returned or I'm encountering hiring freezes, and I have no more unemployment benefits left?
No.
I've gone through all my savings. I'm getting through all my retirement. And I have a work activity log that the Department of Unemployment and Training here in Massachusetts asked me to keep that is going over 200 pages long.
Wow.
What? Mm. I've gone to support groups. I've gone to my university career resource center. I've done countless informational interviews.
But you've got more people piling behind you into the unemployed pool who become, in effect, your competitors. That is a good question and a tough challenge. Susan, thanks for calling. Patricia, you must see this dynamic. I mean, that's one of the problems is, as employment mounts, if you don't have a job, you're facing more competition to get one.
Yes, and how do you stand out in the crowd is really key. Can I ask you one question, and that is, when you mentioned all your informational interviews, how many of those would you have a week?
A week, I'd rather qualify it per month, and I would say about 5 a month.
Okay. You know, in this market in particular, or any market, what's going to separate you out is actually trying to get that goal to 4, 5, or 10 a week. The 85% of individuals who land opportunities land it through a network contact. And the traditional kind of networking where you go and you say, gee, I'm looking for a job, can you help me, is not going to work. What's going to make a difference is that you look at networking in a very different way. It's about building relationships, having a conversation.
But 10 a week, that's a huge volume. I mean, how does anyone pull that up? You've got to be almost maniacal about it. Maybe.
It's a full-time job to look for a full-time job. And the caller has definitely done everything she needs to do. But
there may not be 10 a week in her field. Are you saying bust right out of the boundaries of your field?
You need to be strategic. One of the things that we encourage our clients to do is look at 2 or 3 different directions or paths, if you will. So you're looking at your PR path, but what else might you be able to do? Maybe you can do some freelance writing, or maybe you can do some reporting. Or maybe communications, internal communications positions.
I've tried all of those.
Right,
they
I hear you.
Working. I've tried all of that.
Right.
Well, I don't think we're going to have a silver bullet here, but I guess the message there is, you know, go at it on all fronts as hard as you can. And Susan, I don't mean to say by that it's easy, but good luck to you. Maurice, you're listening to all this. I know you've got the big picture in mind. You want that extension of the safety net, that extension of benefits. Let's be real at the same time. That may or may not come through, but we're being told we may be in for some years of this. Is that going to mean a lot of people changing careers?
Yes, and I think the prior caller, Ezekiel, raised a really good point, and I think, Susan, this may help Susan's situation, too. Folks do need to participate in training. You know, getting some education during a downtime like this is really helpful. But the resources need to be there to help them. I think Duncan mentioned that the way the rules work in the different states, in fact, you're supposed to be able to collect unemployment benefits while you are in training. That's a federal requirement on the states. But it has to be training that's approved by the state. So the question is the state approving the sort of training, higher education, the sort of thing that people really need right now, or are they only approving short-term training? And that's an issue for the states. It's also an issue for the federal government in modernizing the program. What's being considered in Congress gets at this question by providing extra unemployment benefits for people to participate in that sort of training. That's absolutely critical.
Challenge is big. Safety net is smaller than it was. You want to keep track of what's happening there in Washington. It may matter to you wherever you are in these United States. Dustin Swain at the Tennessee Career Center in North Nashville. Thank you very much for being with us this hour, Dustin.
Thanks, Tom. It's my pleasure.
And Maurice Imsellem in Berkeley, California at the National Employment Law Project. Thanks very much for being here, Maurice.
Thank you very much.
Patricia Smith, right here with me from New Directions in Boston. Thanks for joining us, Patricia.
Thank you, Tom.
And to everybody out there, good luck. Keep your hopes up. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.